afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Sports Inquirer podcast. Your host, E. Marcel Portsuit. It's been way too long since I've been with you guys out there in the internet land. I was just looking at my calendar, and it looks like the last episode that I actually did. Let me turn my mic up. There we go. Last episode I actually did of the show was around May 9th, and we're in May 20th right now, so that's way too long. And that's the longest break that we've had since we started up the show. So apologies for that, and I'm going to go into the reasons why I had to take about a two-week break from the show, and we'll get into all of that fun stuff. But first of all, once again, if you want to have communication with us, you can always head to Twitter under Sports Inquirer, all in one word. Shoot us a tweet there, become a member, and send all of your information there. I'm on there every day. I'll be on there tonight and all throughout the playoff season. So shoot me an email as well at sportsinquirer@gmail.com. If you want to send me an email about some content you want to hear more of, or some suggestions of what you want me to talk about, or let's get some good dialogue going there. And then finally, on Facebook, we're always on the Sports Inquirer, all separate words. We have a group page there, and you can join that as well. And finally, you can go to iTunes and subscribe to our podcast. It's listed under the Sports Inquirer. So that is the name of the podcast, The Sports Inquirer, all separate words. You can subscribe to all of our shows so that anytime I upload a new show, like I will at the conclusion of today's episode, you can have it uploaded into your iTunes store under the podcast, and you can get all of our shows. And once again, always support our fellow bloggers under the startinglineup.net based out of Chicago. Gonna chop it up with them in a little bit. Matter of fact, in the next day or two, and get some guidelines as far as my contributions to the site. But they have an excellent weekly show on Saturday afternoons, and I believe it's from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, but that may change. But I'll always go over to that site, and they'll have all the information you need there as far as when the shows will be started. And I believe you can actually attend the show as well in Chicago area, so I recommend that you check that out. So once again, welcome to the 25th episode of the Sports Inquirer podcast, reaching a nice little milestone there. And when I come back, I'm going to give you some updates on what we're doing here at the Sports Inquirer overall and plans that we have throughout the summer. Welcome back to the Sports Inquirer podcast. Your host once again, E. Marcel Portsuit. And going to give you some rundown of what's been going on here at the podcast or sportsinquirer.net over the past few weeks. Two big reasons that we haven't done a show in a while. First of all, is I was actually in New York City, went back home to Brooklyn for a few days for my high school reunion. And later on in the show, I'm going to break down my New York City trip. Had some good activities there. But the second reason is that I've actually had some opportunities come up professionally while I've enjoyed working with doing the podcast. And as I've been telling people, this podcast will keep going on until the day that I move on to the next level of life. So we're going to continue to do this show for a long time, but it does not pay the bills. So what I've been doing is actually looking for some full-time work, had some interviews with various companies in different fields and everything like that. And I actually found a nice position, and I'm actually going to be starting a new position with Neighbor Newspapers here in Georgia. And I'm going to be the sports editor of the North Fulton and DeKalb areas. So in essence, I'm going to serve as a sports editor for various newspapers within a conglomerate, such as the Roswell Neighbor, the Alpharetta Neighbor, Milton Neighbor, and some other papers. And over time, as I'm doing my work, you're going to hear plenty about it. We're going to definitely focus on some Georgia sports and prep sports as well once they start getting going really in the fall. But that's what I've been focused on and working on, and I actually start there later this week. So I have a new position there. I'm really excited about it. Some good people over there. We've had some good meetings, and I'm looking forward to getting involved with that. And also, I took a little bit of a break, too, because I wanted to kind of analyze and focus on what our purpose is here and what we're not necessarily not trying to accomplish, but what our focuses are going to be. And as all of you out there that have been very supportive listening to the show, I do get the messages on Facebook and on Twitter and other things like that. All of you out there, friends, family, and otherwise, have been really supportive of the show, and I greatly appreciate it. But the past few months have been really good for me to, one, figure out what I'm doing here and get the technical side of it taken care of, but also just figure out what our content is going to be. And we throw a lot of stuff out there as far as certain sports that I'm into and certain sports that you are into as well. I've actually received requests to talk about different sports than I have in the past, and that's always appreciated, getting feedback from all of you listeners out there. So over time, you're going to see more of a focus on maybe certain regions of the country. Obviously, we're based in the Southeast, being here in Atlanta, so you may see a little bit more focus on Southeastern sports. But what I mean by that is we're still going to talk college football and Major League Baseball, NBA, NHL. Mixed martial arts is still going to be a major part of our subject matters. But we may have more of a Southeastern feel of it. So that may be something you may notice over time, but I'm not going to leave out general things. Matter of fact, in the next segment, we're going to talk about the NBA playoffs. And outside of Memphis and Miami, you know, all the other teams are other parts of the country, and we've talked about all the other teams in the playoffs on a national level. So that's not going to change. But as I said, you may see some changes there as far as maybe regional aspect of it. Also, been doing some planning for what we're going to do some outside events outside of the studios here in Atlanta. I'm making plans to attend SEC Media Days in Hoover, Alabama for football in July. So I'm wrapping that up right now as far as setting that up. I'm really looking forward to heading down there and getting some interviews and really starting the preparations for college football season down here in the Southeast. Also going to finally make that trip up to Chicago, hopefully, in August. And as I said, we have a good partnership with the startinglineup.net. And I'm actually going to physically make my efforts to be up there in August. And also have some family up there as well. And hopefully from there we could develop some relationships maybe with the Big Ten and some of the Midwestern teams there as well. So that's going to be really good for us. We're growing and expanding. If you're not growing, you're shrinking and you're getting smaller. And that's not the place to be in this day and age. So we're going to do a lot of that stuff. A lot more written content and social commentary. We've been very focused on getting the actual podcast out and making sure we produce several of those a week when we're up and running. And I think we've done a pretty good job of that as far as here with the staff and everything that's going on. So now we're going to focus a little bit more on getting written content on the sportsinquire.net. And so look forward to seeing more written content there and social commentary as well. I really enjoy also talk. We had a good conversation a few weeks ago about sexuality and sports. And I want to talk about more, maybe more outside the lines or real sports, the shows on ESPN and HBO respectively, and really look at that side of sports as well. So I really want to talk more about that as well. So those are some things you're going to see. And finally, we're going to have more guests on the show. We've been fortunate to have great people like Spencer from Sports Minds of America and also Condor Addison. He was able to give some good NFL draft commentary. We're going to get some more guests on the show. I know a lot of you want to hear from other people, and I know some of you out there want to contribute to the show as well. I've received interest in that regard as well. So working on the technology to get that done. So hopefully within the next month or two, we'll have a viable option as far as having people maybe call in or conduct interviews And they're different. We're working on that, definitely, and doing research on it. So once all of that stuff is... So summer's going to be a very busy time for us. I know the NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs are winding down, and people look at that unofficially as the end of the sports season outside of Major League Baseball. But there's still a lot of activities going on, and we're going to be doing a lot here on the sportsinquirer.net. So I want to give you a quick update on what's been going on here in the studio and with the company. And because, as I said, we've had a few weeks to really sit down and figure some of this stuff out. And when I come back, I'm going to get to actual sports content, and we're going to review what's been going on in the NBA playoffs here on the Sports Inquirer podcast. You know, since the last time that we talked, there have actually been a full set of playoff series or round that took place, the conference semifinals. So what I'm going to do first is I'm going to review what happened in each of those in the previous round, and then I'll get to San Antonio-Memphis series and game one last night, and then also Miami and Indiana, which is going to start up on Wednesday, give a little bit of preview of kind of what to expect and to deal with there. So let's start off with the Memphis and Oklahoma City series. And actually, I'm going to take a little bit of a break here because, as I said, we're doing live radio. And the exciting part about live radio, it's live. But also when your neighbor is mowing his lawn and you have your window open, you can hear it. I can hear it in the background. So I'm going to take a little bit of a break here. And when I come back, we're going to continue talking about the playoffs. All right, that's much better there. Sorry I had to take a little bit of a break there. It reminds me I need to do my yard work this weekend, but I couldn't have that in the background. I don't know if you may have heard that, but I definitely did, and that was not cool. All right, so let's review what's happened on with the playoff series so far. Memphis got through Oklahoma City 4-1. Obviously, with the Russell Westbrook injury in the first round for the Thunder when they played the Rockets, you knew that they'd be in trouble facing a team like Memphis, especially the physicality that they have with Zach Randolph and Marcus Gasol inside. That the biggest difference, I thought, in that series, two things. You saw the progression of Mike Conley Jr. from the Grizzlies, who really took advantage of the backcourt of, or the point guards of, Reggie Jackson and Derek Fisher. Mike Conley tore them up the entire series, and that was a big factor in Memphis getting through. And the second thing you saw was the lack of support that Kevin Durant has. Now, national media, it's been a hot button debate as far as was it too much for Durant to handle? How much blame should he get when other players in the past, such as LeBron James mainly, while they haven't had the lack of supporting cast as well, they've been criticized heavily. Carmelo Anthony's starting to deal with that a little bit, and we'll get to that series with Indiana in a little bit. I don't think it was really necessarily Durant's fault. He still produced a lot of points. You know, put up 39 points in the ultimate series in Game 5, which they ultimately lost, you know, to Memphis. So he produced the points, and I thought he did a really good job in that regard. But the players like Serge Ibaka did not step up. Seth Volosha gave them nothing. Kevin Martin was really a non-factor coming off of the bench. It really showed the value of Westbrook to the entire offensive impact of the Thunder. And I've been critical of Westbrook just as much as, or maybe more than a lot of other people with his play, but you always respected the point production that he had and the control that he had of the Oklahoma City offense. And you really saw when he got that knee injury against Houston, the struggles that the Thunder have. So that was an interesting series. And in Miami over Chicago, the Heat ended up winning that series 4-1. Even the Bulls winning that first game, I knew they would be in trouble, especially with Luol Deng being out and Kirk Heinrich not participating in the series at all. I respect what Chicago's done. Big fan of Joakim Noah and everything that Tom Thibodeau and that team represents. But that series ended up being about a lack of bodies. And in the end, you saw that they had no help to really deal with Miami. And even with Dwayne Wade dealing with his injuries and not being 100%, they didn't have enough to deal with Miami. And you saw the Heat handle them pretty easily the rest of that series. Game two was a little bit of a struggle as well. Actually, I'll take that back. Games three and game five were a little bit of a struggle for Miami. But in the end, they end up getting the victories. None of them were. It really was pretty obvious what would happen there. Probably the most entertaining series we've had so far in the playoffs was San Antonio and Golden State. The Spurs ended up winning that series 4-2. I knew when the Spurs won game one, 129-127 in double overtime, that the Warriors would be in trouble. Curry had a record-breaking performance for the Warriors in game one, and they still couldn't get the victory. And you saw throughout the rest of the series, Klay Thompson had a big game two for the Warriors and good moments for him and Bogut. And Jared Jack, solid contributors to what they were trying to do. Harrison Barnes, big emergence for him. And that's really, really good for Golden State in the future. But throughout that series, you really saw that they were wearing down throughout the entire series. And when Tony Parker got going and Ginobili, when his health started getting right, you saw the Spurs really take advantage of the opportunity. And Golden State, they ended up winning game two, 100-91. I say Thompson had a big game there. If Golden State was able to win those first two games in San Antonio, I think the Warriors would have advanced to the Western Conference Finals. But losing that game one, I thought, was too much to deal with. And I know that the Warriors end up getting one, getting game four in Oakland and winning that contest. But in the end, you saw the Spurs, too many veterans on that team, and they got the win there. Finally, Indiana over New York. Pacers won its series 4-2. In the end, I don't understand the criticism of Carmelo Anthony because he's playing the same way that he's performed his entire career. You're not going to see much different from him. He's a scorer. He's going to give you 30 points, you hope, in the postseason per game. And that's really all you're going to get. You're not going to get a lot of assists, not too many rebounds, decent to okay effort and on the defensive end, but he makes his money and he's there to score. So he's not going to morph his game into being a point forward like we've seen some other guys do, or be a good rebounder or become a lockdown defender. That's not going to happen. And I don't think the expectations for Knicks fans, including myself, at times fit what you want from him. Now, I will say this. The offensive execution of the Knicks, particularly with the point guards of Felton and Jason Kidd, I thought was lacking very much. I thought Copeland should have played a lot more. He was getting buckets in Game 5 and Game 6, and I thought he should have saw a little bit more run. J.R. Smith, really up and down. The inconsistencies were too much to deal with overall. And I thought the most disappointing part of the series was Tyson Chandler. And I know stories are coming out now. He was maybe not 100% health-wise going into the Indiana series. But Roy Hibbert and David West had their way inside against Tyson Chandler, getting numerous offensive rebounds and just dominating the paint. And that's really what caused the Knicks to lose that series. It wasn't Anthony's effort. It wasn't J.R. Smith's inconsistent shooting. The two biggest things were the lack of offensive movement And that I put that on the point guards and Coach Mike Woodson as far as implementing an offensive plan to get more guys open. And then Woodson as well with not using the rotation right and not getting guys like Copeland more shots. And secondly was the interior and the size disadvantage in play-wise that the Knicks had to deal with. So those are the biggest things I saw as far as the Knicks losing that series. And we'll get to what each of those teams can do in the offseason in the future, what during the summer, when after the draft takes place in free agency. But, you know, I thought that was the Knicks' best chance to really make a run in the Eastern Conference for a long time. Because you look at that roster, all of them are they're older players. Jason Kidd's probably not going to be back. Kenyon Martin's not coming back. Amari Stoudemire, a lot of health issues with him. You don't know what to expect from him as far as health-wise goes. You know, you look at Iman Shumpert, who I thought emerged as the best player on the Knicks outside of Carmelo Anthony during that Indiana series. He'll be back. He's a young guy continuing to improve. Jumper's gotten a lot better. But outside of Anthony and Shumpert and maybe Ray Felton, I don't really see who else you can say is going to be on that team next year, including Tyson Chandler. So the Knicks with Miami continuing to do what they do. The Bulls are going to be really strong next year. Indiana, they got a young nucleus that's not going anywhere. And then there's always one or two teams that maybe with a trade or two are going to be right there with the Knicks and Brooklyn. Despite their dysfunction, I thought throughout the season with the changing of the coaches and Deron Williams' inconsistent season until the last month or so when he played at an all-star level. You look at the Eastern Conference, it's going to continue to get better. And I thought this maybe was the best shot for the Knicks to at least make the conference finals and give Miami a test. I didn't expect the Knicks to get to the finals, but at least make the Eastern Conference finals. That would have been good. So let's get to the current series. We have San Antonio and Memphis. Spurs were impressive with a 105-83 victory over the Grizzlies. When you hold Zach Randolph to 1-8 shooting from the field, and he only has 2 points and 7 rebounds, it's going to be nearly impossible for the Grizzlies to win that game. And that's what you saw. Spurs, I think they had about 35 field goals and 20 assists in the contest. Outstanding ratio. Ball movement was on point. And when you see frustration from a Tim Duncan or Tony Parker, watching that game, you saw the execution in full force. And when they're making passes and guys aren't cutting and you see the frustration, their level of attempted perfection is inspiring to watch. And you know that the Grizzlies are going to be in trouble if they're playing at that level. Now, the Grizzlies, it's been documented, they lost Game 1 Oklahoma City and they lost Game 1 to the Clippers earlier in the playoffs. So we know that Lionel Hollins and the Grizzlies can adjust and make things happen after they lose the first game of a series. But I think if you're keying in on stopping Zach Randolph with Tim Duncan and Tiago Splitter inside, that's going to be a lot for the Grizzlies to overcome. The Grizzlies are not going to get swept. They're going to win several games. I think it's going to be a 7-game series. But in the end, when Tony Parker is allowed to freelance the way that he was in Game 1 in the perimeter and make passes and hit open layups, that's going to be really tough for the Grizzlies to overcome. And then finally, Miami and Indiana, that series starts on Wednesday, which makes absolutely no sense. I don't know why the NBA continues to do that as far as stretching out these series. The Indiana-New York game, I understand the reasoning, because if there was a Game 7, that would have been tonight, and then from there, they would have gone to Miami to play on Wednesday. But I don't understand how Game 6 ended the series, why they couldn't move that game up to Monday or tonight, because we're without the NBA tonight, which is really not necessary. And I know that the reasonings is probably just with people buying tickets and all that stuff. I don't understand that at all. But anyway, their game is on Wednesday, Game 1. Miami's going to win this series, probably in 6. But the two factors you do have to watch out for, one is the health of Wade. I know that he had a little bit ups and downs in that Chicago series. If he's not 100% or at least close to it, Miami's going to really struggle to win this series and even win a championship. Because for the greatness that LeBron James has shown, 4 MVPs in 5 seasons, they still need Wade to be a major contributor to what the Heat are doing on the perimeter. So that's the first thing to watch. And two, you saw the advantage that David West and Hibbert had inside overall. I think that if they can bring that to bring that into the Miami series, who honestly, Bosch doesn't really play inside in the physical way. We all love Birdman, Chris Anderson, but he's a role player. Joel Anthony really doesn't get on the really get to play that much, period, let alone be a contributor. The Pacers have a nice advantage inside that they can get against Miami and get some points there and get that offensive rebounding going. And then also with Lance Stephenson, a little bit of an X factor, he's a tough player. Maybe you can give him some good physicality and defense against LeBron, and that can maybe slow him down. But overall, I think you're going to see a San Antonio-Miami finals, which is fair because those have been two of the three best teams throughout the entire season. Oklahoma City was right there with San Antonio as far as best team in the West. Miami was clearly the best team in the East. I think that's what you're going to see in the finals. But throughout that, both of those series, we're going to be doing shows. So we're going to have analysis of each of those games individually. And when I come back, I'm going to... That was my backdoor cut. And that was the NBA Playoffs edition. Next, we're going to have the Neutral Zone Trap. And that's going to be a review of what we've seen so far in the NHL playoffs here on the Sports Inquirer podcast. Excuse me. Welcome back to the Sports Inquirer podcast. Host E. Marcel Portu. While we've had the NBA playoffs going in full swing, we've also had the NHL with their playoff series, and they're already in their conference finals as well. Actually, no, they're in conference semifinals. Excuse me. So we're going to talk a little bit about that right now. First of all, it's good to be in New York during the NHL playoffs. Rangers were back in there, and they made a playoffs for the past few years in a row now, which is pretty good because before that, I think they had a run of about 7-8 years where they didn't even make the postseason. But they've been in there the past, like, 3 years in a row, so that's been good to see. And the Islanders, they made their first appearance in the playoffs, I think since 2007 or no, maybe even longer than that. It's been a while for the Islanders. So it was good to be in there seeing the Islanders and the Rangers in playoff action. The Islanders end up losing 4-2. To the Penguins, but they got an excellent future with John Tavares and a few others. But it was good to be back in the NYC with that atmosphere and seeing a lot of Rangers gear and seeing all the support that they were getting. But let's just get to the conference semifinals that we see right now. Boston have a commanding 2-0 lead over the New York Rangers. I need to see a lot more from the Rangers' power play. It was really disappointing that they couldn't get any production with the power play, and they got to get off the better starts, too. And even in the first period, Bruins scored a goal. Callahan willed his way, tied the game 1-1. A few minutes later, Bruins score another goal. Now they're now 2-1. Rangers actually end up tying that game 2-2 and eventually lost 5-2. But you have to get more from the power play, and Rick Nash included. You know, he's the main guy as far as scoring. He really has had a quiet series. Finally scored his first goal of the entire playoffs in Game 2 yesterday. Brad Richards, who was a big free agent signing by the Rangers, really not being a major contributor at all, made numerous mistakes on the defensive end, and even offensively, just was not a contributor. And the commentators are talking about maybe benching him for the next few games when he moves to New York. I don't think you can, because if there's one thing you can get from him, you would hope, is to be a specialist on a power play, and that hasn't happened at all. But at least you have to have him out there because he still has a skill to be productive, and hopefully you would think being in New York with the last line change in the hometown crowd, he can get things going. But it looks like Boston is going to be too deep for the Rangers, especially on the defensive end. Boston's a major player, and with Tuukka Rasa at goal, that's going to be a really tough series for the Rangers to get. And, of course, Boston has commanding 2-0 lead there. Chicago and Detroit tied 1-1. Blackhawks lost game 2, first loss in regulation since late March. So that was a really major win for Detroit. Next two games head over to Joe Louis. That series is going to go 7 games. It's a coin flip. If Henrik Zetterberg is going to continue to have the offensive performance like he did in game 2 and contribute and control the pace on both ends of the floor, or ends of the ice, excuse me, Chicago's going to be in deep trouble. And Crawford had a solid game between the pipes, so I don't think it's going to be a goaltending issue. But if SF Zetterberg becomes hot, especially at home, that could definitely get a 3-1 lead in that series so far. Los Angeles and San Jose, the Kings are up 2-1. Kings could have won game 3, had a really good chance, but Logan Couture, who's really emerged, you would think with the presence of Marleau and Joe Thornton, that those guys would be the offensive cogs and the top players on the team. And even with Niemi at goaltender, Couture has really placed himself as the best player on that team, and maybe one of the top 5 or 10 players in all the NHL. And he had the late goal in that contest and helped get that series 2-1. His Kings still have the advantage, but that was a really good win for San Jose to get that first one at home. And finally, Pittsburgh and Ottawa. Pittsburgh could have had a 3-0 lead in this series and taken advantage of it. They had the oddest last 2 minutes of that contest, and they let Daniel Alfredsson get a shorthanded goal late in the third period, I believe with about a minute left, to send that game into overtime, and ultimately on a power play, the Senators got a goal, and now that series is 2-1. And it's good that Ottawa won that game, but I think that's going to be really tough for them to win that entire series. Pittsburgh looks locked, loaded, and ready to make a major run to another Stanley Cup. So that's your NHL thoughts of what I've seen so far. If you have any thoughts on it and want to contribute, just send me an email at sportsinquirer@gmail.com or send me a tweet under sportsinquirer, all one word. I'm going to take another break here. When I come back, I'm going to talk a little bit more about my trip to New York and where it places within what we're trying to do here at the Sports Inquirer podcast. All right, welcome back to the show. As I said, about 2 weeks ago, I went over to New York City and had my high school reunion. big movements at Browning High School. Shout out to all of you out there. I know a few of you guys listen to the show and are familiar with it, so respect to all you guys out there. 125th anniversary of the high school since 1888. That's when Browning started, and really good event chopping it up with all my friends and teachers that still go there, or teachers that are still there, which is always interesting because I graduated, wow, close to 15 years ago. Oh, let's see, 99. Yeah, about 14 years ago, coming 14th anniversary of my graduation, and their teacher is still there doing well, and you know, it's always good to come back home and see all of that stuff. But it was a really good event because a lot of changes to the school. I know all of you out there can relate. Probably you go back to your high school from 5, 10, 15 years ago and so forth, and all the modernization of it and the changes in a positive way. My high school is really an equivalent of a New York brownstone about 5 floors up, and that was it. Really small school. But they bought some land, bought the building next door, and knocked it down, and implemented a new cafeteria and new workout areas and everything like that. So the school's pretty much doubled in the size as far as the actual land or the square footage. And it's still the same amount of kids that go there. So they have a lot more room and a lot more opportunities. And I deal with the same thing whenever I head down to Vanderbilt for college. And that school's expanded as well, and respect to all my Nashville friends out there. And you see all of the expansions, like, man, why wasn't it that there when I was going to school there? But it was really good to see all of that up, catch up with some old friends. Didn't really run the streets as heavy as I used to, or as I usually do. Usually I'm seeing a bunch of friends, family, friend, you know, and all that stuff, going to some New York landmarks, you know, got to hit up Times Square and go to MSG for an event. I really didn't do any of that stuff. I was really in Brooklyn most of the time. I was able to catch up with some church family and from my church, Silent Presbyterian. So I was able to meet some people there and talk with them, and that was really good. But I don't know if it's me getting older or just the fact that I had my big return up there back in December. And before December of 2012, I hadn't been back up to New York in about 7-8 years. So that was really big. I caught up with a lot of folks back in December, and a lot of people wanted to see me. But it seemed like this time, I guess since I just saw them a few months ago, they're kind of like, oh man, wasn't able to make it. And it also went during the middle of the week. A lot of people had work. A lot of people had school. One of my good buddies from high school, we were going to meet up, but he just had a baby. He literally had a baby about 7 weeks ago, so he had to stay home with the fiance and take care of that type of stuff. So I said 31 years old, or 32. I do my mental math here. I'm 31 right now, turned 32, actually in 2 days. But when you reach your early 30s, you know, you start dealing with a lot of just life issues. And it's not, I shouldn't say issues, but, you know, you just deal with people with families, you know, deal with their husbands, wives, children, jobs, you know, all that stuff. Not like when I used to head up to New York back when I was in my early 20s and everyone was available. We'd hit the streets and do what we did, you know, in a positive way, of course. But everyone was available to do that. But now, you know, times change, and that's my first time kind of realizing that, you know, people have other lives and other things to do. But I'm heading back up there probably next fall or next winter, and I'll catch up with them there. I'm trying to get some of them to come down here to Atlanta. Interesting perception of Atlanta with a lot of them, because I've been down here. I've been in the Southeast since 1999 as far as college, and lived in Nashville and Charleston, South Carolina. But I've actually been in Atlanta now 4 years, and none of them, or not a lot of them, have even been down here. So it's still like a foreign territory in a way to them. And you know, I tell them about all the great stuff we have going on down here and the atmosphere, but it's still got that southern, I guess you have that southern perspective of it, both positive and negative. You know, and you went into that a little later. But just trying to get them to come down here is a little bit tougher. And a lot of people don't come down here often from the Northeast, unless you have a specific reason. So just, it was good times telling them what my life is like down here and talking about all that stuff. I ate well, though, man. Had some good pizza, some good sandwiches. New York is still, I'm a big Travel Channel fan, and I see all of the specials on different cities that have good culinary atmospheres or a good culinary scene. New York is still so strong in that, though. And just because you have good representation from all cultures there. And I think the world's getting smaller and a lot better in that regard. As far as if you need, as far as the food side of things, the influences from South America or Asia, Europe, Africa. It seemed like in New York, you would always get that presence there and everyone would come there. But even down here in Atlanta, you head down to Beaufort Highway and went to other spots. I can get Eastern European food in one night and then have good South American food the next. I still think you get that best in New York. And I took advantage of some of those opportunities. Had some good Caribbean food one night. Then I had some good Italian dishes the next night. And everything in between. Had some good sandwiches. Got some pretzels. You know, things like that. You can still do that here in Atlanta, but there's nothing like in New York. The biggest factor, though, in my trip to New York, and I'll wrap it up on this, I miss driving out of everything else. Being down here in Georgia, outside of MARTA, and MARTA's really good for if you live in the metro Atlanta area, but if you live outside of that, you're driving, and I'm so used to having my car, controlling when I get to the store, when I meet up with people, everything like that. The fact that I have to get on a subway or a bus and work on that schedule and factor that into my timing as far as going places is so unique to me. And I grew up with that. I didn't get my license until I was in my mid-20s because I was so used to just hopping on the subway or the train and doing that stuff. But down here, you need the car to handle that. And that was my next to last thing. I'll wrap it up on this fact. Looking at the sports scene in New York, it's so New York-centric. And being it's in Atlanta, maybe it's because it's a more of a transplant atmosphere. I'm a perfect example of that. New Yorker born and raised, moved down to Atlanta, been down here for a few years. I mean, I still carry my New York roots, but I think I'm a better sports fan being down here as far as following different leagues and different teams. Because you have fans of so many different entities down here. You have fans of every team in the SEC or ACC in the college side of it. And so you get their perspective. You have a lot of fans from Louisiana. So you get from the professional side a lot of Saints fans. And fans from Florida and Miami. Well, you know, like Tampa, Orlando, Miami, Carolina. There's a big presence of Carolina people here. So we get the talk of the Bobcats and talking to Panthers and everything like that, all down here in Atlanta. But in New York, it's like if it's not about the Knicks or the Giants or Jets or Rangers, Mets or Yankees, it's really not acknowledged. I mean, it's acknowledged unless it's a national championship or the playoffs. But even the playoff talk, down here, you know, I talk about the all of the teams in the NHL playoffs, the NBA playoffs, and everything like that. I listened to some of the shows up there in New York. It was still New York-centric. Even teams that weren't in the playoffs, they were talking about. So I'll put it this way. Instead of talking about like the Grizzlies and the Spurs like I just did for a minute or so, they would just overkill on what the Mets are doing or the Yankees are doing. Or they wouldn't break down the Chicago and Detroit series like I just talked about. Like you would maybe down here in Atlanta, some of the sports stations here. And the sports stations will maybe, will touch on the Knicks and they'll touch on the Miami-Chicago series and talk about that and what's going on. Instead of that, they would just really talk heavy on what the Yankees are doing or the Jets and the latest melodrama going on up there. So it was definitely different being up there and seeing what's taking place. And I'm glad that I was able to go up there and see the sports atmosphere and see the sports scene and get some influence for what I'm trying to do up here. But once again, it's really good to head up to New York. And on my other blog, portutepancakes.blogspot.com, it's been out of commission for about a year. I'm bringing it back this weekend, and my first post is going to be about my New York experience. So I'll go a little bit more in-depth and some specifics of what was going on up there. So that was a really exciting time to head up to New York and see all the friends and family and chop it up there. I'm going to come back from our last segment, and we're going to debut our sports melange section. And I'm just going to hit some general news and notes in sports and around the world and see what's going on there here on the Sports Inquirer podcast. Ah! final segment of the Sports Inquirer podcast here in Atlanta. Thanks for sticking it through with me. Once again, Emar Selport-Toot. Let's talk about some different things that happened over the past 2 weeks that's outside of our normal topics and what I think of them. I did see the story about the Michigan State recruit Jay Harris turning down a scholarship for a rap career. If you're unfamiliar with the story, Jay Harris, young wide receiver out of the state of Pennsylvania, had a football scholarship to attend Michigan State, but apparently he turned it down to pursue a rap career. My problems with this are several fold, and I did see the counter story that it looks like the Michigan State people saw the YouTube videos that he has out there and ended up rescinding the scholarship. I don't think that's necessarily how it worked out. I think what happened is, and I worked in athletic departments at different locations. The way it usually works in this regard is these coaches, they do extensive research, especially on the football level, especially at the Big Ten level. They do a lot of research on the recruits. They talk to the families. They do background checks. Talk to the head coach, the high school coaches, AAU coaches, so forth. So they do an extensive check on you to make sure before they offer you a scholarship, they know about you. So I'm pretty sure that all of the Michigan State coaches, while they were recruiting this young man, they knew he had a rap career. I mean, he's on YouTube and has a lot of hits on there. It's not like they were offered a scholarship and all of a sudden they heard a rap song and like, oh, we're going to rescind it. So I don't believe that's part of the story. That may be what the family, or what Jay Harris, he's trying to say on his side of things to avoid having egg on his face and make it look like, oh, you know, they're keeping me down and they took it away from me. I don't understand where the coaches and the parents are in this regard. I respect having a side hustle for whatever you're trying to do. This is a side hustle for me, for my endeavors. There's nothing wrong with doing that. But he could have done both. He could have gone to school, gotten his education, played ball. And furthermore, he could have majored in a lot of schools, and especially in Michigan State, he could have done an interdisciplinary major. He could have studied music business or production. He could have tied that into his major while he was playing football and earning a scholarship. So he could have done both of them at the same time. And you never know. It's so hard to earn a scholarship to play college football at Division I level, let alone at a school like Michigan State, a top 20 program, very well respected. I don't understand how you just turn your back on that, and whoever's gassing him up and saying that his career is more important than that, or this is going to give him some street cred, those guys are fools. And I hope it really works out for him, and maybe he can rescind it and maybe play at another school or things like that. But I thought that was just terrible. What the path that he's taking overall, you know, in that. I saw EJ Manuel, former Florida State football player, quarterback. He did mini camps are in full force. We're gonna do an NFL recap on tomorrow's show, or our next show, whenever you're listening to it. And we're gonna go into NFL news and notes, but this one was too good to pass up. EJ Manuel, as I said, first round pick for the Buffalo Bills. He said that the playbook for the Bills is easier than it was at Florida State. And I read the rest of the quote of what he was trying to say, that with the Bills, it's a West Coast offense and there are not a lot of reads, and, you know, it's just an offense that he could be really proficient in. But you haven't taken a preseason snap, let alone a regular season snap. This is mini camp. You're not getting touched. You're not getting hit. You're not making audibles. All you're doing, you're in shorts and a t-shirt or a little jersey. You're running half speed. It may be full speed, but there's no pressure in there. You're just trying to learn a playbook. And the fact that you're saying that the playbook is easier than for an NFL team and a college football team, I understand you're trying to say like the playbook itself is easier. But as an outsider, I look at it as you're saying, oh, this is easier. NFL is easier than college. And we know that's not the case at all. And he's a young man, and he's probably in his early 20s. A little bit of slip of the tongue, I guess. I know what he was trying to say, but that was not a good look for him to make that statement. And we'll see what happens with him going there. Also saw Brittany Griner, first overall pick for the Phoenix Mercury, the WNBA, former Baylor great. She's claiming that while she was at Baylor, she was told to keep her sexuality private. She has come out as a lesbian woman. And we, that, you know, we all, if you're listening to the podcast, you know about the full story of that. I don't, and similar to EJ Manuel, I don't think she was trying to be negative about it or trying to throw the Baylor people under the bus. Maybe she was, maybe she wasn't. I don't know. I just saw the quote and I didn't really get the full story of it. I'll be honest with you on that regard. But as I said, I kind of understand where the school is coming from with this. And I've stated in the past on this show and personally, you know, we're very big fans. We're pro gay, lesbian, transgender community. That's not our issue at all. And I was happy for her that she was able to come out in her own way and live her life. And that's all good. But I say that as an individual, as someone who would be an athletic director or a head coach for a college, I'm cool with it personally, but as someone representing a university that unfortunately has fans and other people that may not be as agreeable to that lifestyle, I can understand why the school would do that and make sure that she kept it private for the sake of the school and for attention. And as I said, as an individual, I would tell her, no, you can't do that, because she's a grown woman. Just, you know, that would be unprofessional, and that would just be illegal, honestly, in a lot of ways. You can't do that. Tell someone that they can't practice their sexuality and in a private time. But as far as in relation to representing the school and everything like that, it's a tough spot, because you're like the person as a player and as an individual, and you want them to be happy and to really express themselves. But as I said, unfortunately, in the environment that we're in, even at 2013, it's really sad. A lot of people aren't able to handle that as far as a player or a fellow student, things like that, having that sexual orientation. So as I said, I understand what Baylor was doing there as far as maybe making her, and maybe for her sake too, honestly. I mean, there may have been rumors out there or whatever her practices were. But also, in a way, you avoid all of that negative. You avoid all of that overall attention when you don't really go public with it. And I say she's professional now, and I'm happy for her and everything like that. But I said, I can understand where Baylor's coming from with that. I see the Charlotte Bobcats are going to change their name back to the Hornets, or they're petitioning for that, since the New Orleans NBA franchise, they're not going to be the Pelicans starting this next NBA season. Charlotte is going to go with the Hornets. Really good move on several levels. One, the Bobcats is not working. Worst franchise in the past few years. Historically low level of performance for Charlotte the past few years as the Bobcats. Changed the name, new energy, everything like that. That's tremendous. Secondly, Charlotte Hornets, when they were cooking, were one of the fun NBA franchises out there, sold out a lot of times. And that's where there was the issue with George Shinn as the owner of the Charlotte Hornets, and also ultimately moved them over to New Orleans. And people talked so bad about how the end of the Hornets' time in Charlotte was bad. There were a few years when they had, obviously, Larry Johnson, Muggsy Bogues, Alonzo Mourning, Glenn Rice for a bit. That was one of the more successful franchises as far as selling seats, and even on the court made a few playoff runs and everything like that. People tend to forget about that stuff, but when the ownership really turned their back on the community, and that's when their turn was for the worst. But I think Charlotte, who I think could be a viable NBA franchise, it's in a good location. I mean, if you see teams like Sacramento and Oklahoma City, and even Portland, have their moments as far as success in the NBA, Charlotte's a bigger market than all of those. As far as media attention, fan attendance, you have some good sponsorships there as far as it's a really bank capital, as far as Bank of America and a few others that are located down there. It has the potential to be a really good area as far as business goes. So maybe with the change to the Hornets, they can really make a turn in the positive direction. Now, that's off the court. Not on the court, they have a long ways to go, and maybe they can get the first pick in this draft lottery that's going to take place, I believe, tomorrow night or Wednesday night, and build from there. But I saw that in the ticker and wanted to comment on that. Finally, the English Premier League and the EPL finished their season up yesterday. Man United, they clinched their title a few weeks ago, but another championship. Sir Alex Ferguson retiring, greatest soccer coach of all time. I don't care. I'm not. People have tried to break it down. He's the greatest domestic coach or greatest international coach, all this other stuff. When you've won multiple Champions League, when he was a coach in Scotland and obviously two, it was at Manchester United, won, I believe, 15 or 16 Premier League titles, has led in generations of all-timers in their respective leagues, or in the EPL, and for the respective countries all around the world. He's the best soccer coach of all time. I don't care what anyone says. But he ended his tenure there and everything like that. My Gunners, Arsenal, finished fourth, qualifying for the Champions League for the 16th consecutive year. While I'm happy that they qualified and going to get that money, as far as EPL, I mean, for the Champions League, they got to do better than fourth place. And the thing that was most concerning as a fan of Arsenal is I saw Arsene Wenger, the longtime coach of Arsenal, he talked about how, and I quote, "We want for this upcoming offseason, we want to make additions, but keep the spirit of the squad." Now, while Arsenal was a lot better in the second half of the season and actually qualified for the Champions League, when it looked like they would finish maybe fifth or sixth, for an Arsenal fan that hasn't seen a championship of any form or a trophy in close to 10 years, that's unacceptable. Now, I know that the finances of Manchester United and Chelsea and Manchester City have changed the landscape of what's been going on as far as English soccer goes, but that's really unacceptable when you believe that finishing in fourth place works. There are plenty of ways that they could have been better overall as a team over the past few seasons to get a trophy. And when you hear it, it's the equivalent of your head coach saying, "We're going to make the playoffs and that's nice. We're happy just making the playoffs." That's not what you want to hear from a coach on any level, especially when it comes to soccer or football in England. When you've won championships, you've won trophies in the past and then hopefully in the future. So I didn't like hearing that from him. But as I said, they finished in fourth place. They're in the Champions League. They got to get further, though. Hopefully they can make some changes in the offseason and make some things happen. So that's what I saw as far as different things in the world of sports from the past 2 weeks. Thank you once again for listening to the Sports Inquirer podcast. Next episode, we're going to do Major League Baseball and discuss some things that are going on there. We're going to have our game tonight. We'll talk a little bit more NBA playoffs and with some NBA happenings and things that we've seen going on. NFL. Big news in the NFL. It's offseason. It's still in full swing. There have been some signings and some transactions on and off the field. We're going to get into some of that. Finally, mixed martial arts. We're going to talk about that as well. I have a big pay-per-view coming up this weekend, so we're going to get into that as well. So once again, thank you for listening to the Sports Inquirer podcast. It's been a pleasure talking to you. E. Marcel Portute. Until next time, good fight, good night.